So welcome to the live stream. Today we're going to be answering a series of questions that have been submitted to us about the design and construction of custom homes. So my name is Mitch Rushlow. I'm a principal architect at Rost Architects in Orange County, California. Rost was established in 2017, and we do work all over the Southern California region, primarily in Orange County and LA. Some of the California deserts, and then some also out of state, including Montana, New Mexico, Texas, and we are kind of in the middle of a project in Japan right now overseas, which is really exciting. We've worked on many different project scales, ranging from remodels to custom ground up, large estate properties. I don't want to go into my background too much, but I do want to give you a little bit of information about myself so you can hopefully feel that you're getting information that's credible and tested. I've been doing this for a long time, so I can share a lot of that experience with you and make your journey building your custom home hopefully more enjoyable, and try to identify those points in the project where there are potential pitfalls and where trouble could possibly occur. So I received my undergraduate degree from Texas A&M and graduate degree in architecture from UCLA. I've been working on construction sites since I was a kid, and then also worked on many other industries sectors related to the construction of custom homes, including the finance and development sectors. I try to come at these projects from many different angles. So in addition to creating a beautiful home aesthetically, which is probably the primary part of the position, we are also trying to make sure that the home is functional, it's practical, it's sound from an engineering perspective and a construction perspective, and also that we're responsibly managing the client's financial investment. So this is often one of the largest financial investments that people, clients will make in their lives. And as the architect on the project, our team and myself, we try to provide counsel that guides clients in the right direction. So we're going to scroll up on the video when we publish it, some examples of our work. But right now, I want to give you a little bit of background on our firm. So we work and focus primarily on custom residential projects that establish a strong connection with the landscape. They use natural materials and they optimize views out to nature. Our projects are usually, they aim to create this place of peace, tranquility, and retreat for our clients, where they can feel comfortable, relax, and their minds are kind of at ease. So we enjoy simple spaces, unadorned spaces where the site and the natural materials are really celebrated. So that's enough about me and Rost. Let's get into the questions. This is gonna be a Q&A session addressing the more practical aspects of building a custom home. I'm gonna try to pack it full of valuable information and really kind of get to the meat and potatoes of the typical questions that were asked from clients beginning to pursue this journey. So first question that was submitted is, what is the total cost of building my custom home? This depends in large part on the location and the local market where that home is being potentially built. A good place to start is the cost per square foot for the home. So if you look at, or if you work with your architect or you consult with your general contractor, in the local market where you're building or wanting to build, they're going to be able to identify a kind of typical cost range for the construction of the type and quality of home that you're trying to pursue. So for example, in building a custom home in Orange County, we know that this varies based upon the city, but in 2025, a rough cost of, let's say, $600 to $800 a square foot is relatively reasonable. It can go up from there, but if we start with, let's say, $700 a square foot as a placeholder, you want to build a 2,000 square foot home, relatively modest, you're looking at around a $1.4 million home. So that's going to give you a good start. And keep in mind, this is only a cost of construction. So the actual home, this doesn't include the soft costs and the cost of the land or other site features. Now I'm going to go in and talk more about what soft costs are, and then talk about how to establish a what we call a pro forma, or kind of think of it simply a budget for your project. So in a pro forma, there's we like to separate it out into soft costs, hard costs, and then the cost of the land. So those three categories, keep those in mind. Soft costs include engineering fees, architectural fees, city permit fees, interior design fees, plan check fees, et cetera. These are what we call the soft cost fees. They're not the sticks and bricks or the built product out on site. These are design, engineering, all of the fees that will get you up to the point to be able to build your home. So that's soft cost. Hard costs include the tangible items that are being built on site. So what is the cost of my lumber, concrete, steel, glass, doors and windows, cabinets, all of that? That's hard costs. So the cost per square foot that we talked about initially was just the, or would encompass the hard costs and the cost of some general contractor costs within that. I'll elaborate on that more. So the third category is the cost of land. Some people like to factor that cost of land inside of either soft costs or hard costs, but I like to kind of pull it out and establish a third category, cost of land. So it's important that in your pro forma or your budget, you're factoring in the cost that you are incurring to carry your land. So the mortgage rate that you have on your or mortgage that you're paying every single month, what is that cost of land that you're carrying? And you need to factor that out for an estimated duration of construction and design. So let's say it takes the design process takes 8 months to get permits. You're carrying your land through that entire 8 months. So you need to factor in the mortgage, the cost of the land every single month there. Let's say the permit phase takes 4 months to get through. You need to factor in that for the 4 months. And then you have your construction phase. Typically, let's say 18 months on average, you need to factor in the cost to carry that land over the 18 months. So factoring in those costs within your pro forma or your budget is really important and will help you get a more realistic picture of the total funds that you're going to be investing in the property. Okay, we talked about, separating the costs into those three categories. Consulting with your architect about these costs and establishing a general budget is a really good idea at the conception of the project. So I think you can begin to develop those numbers based upon your knowledge of the market. But consulting with an architect, especially get a good idea of the soft costs associated with it. So engineering costs, they can have a real good idea of what a structural engineer, civil engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical engineer costs to complete the design of a property of a scale and size and quality that you're looking to build. And they can help you assemble the pro forma for your home. I want to go back and restate that these costs are widely vary across the country. They widely vary across even states. So cities, more kind of rural areas, the cost of construction is going to be very different because the cost of labor is different. The cost to ship materials is very different. So you want to go to that local market and get those costs from a professional in that local market, not just be doing kind of a Google search to get a general scale. You really want to be specific about that. Next question, go to that one. So next question is, I'm looking at purchasing a piece of land. How do I determine my lot's zoning and land use regulations? This is a really good question to ask. This is often a question that we're asked by owners when they're either in the middle of purchasing a property in escrow or even before they're purchasing a property. Let's just say they're looking for pieces of land to invest in with the goal of building their custom home, and they want to understand what they can build on the lot and what are the regulations that their project is going to have to comply to in order to come to fruition. Getting a good grasp on this is incredibly important. It can allow a homeowner to determine if that piece of land is right for them. So I encourage people to do this early in the process. For example, if you're purchasing a piece of property and you come to realize that the regulations, land use regulations, zoning regulations limit the square footage you can build on a property to a certain level, which won't allow you to have your five-bedroom home to house your, let's say, family, you know that that upfront prior to engaging in escrow or getting into escrow or purchasing the property, that that home probably, or that piece of land, probably won't work for you. Working with an architect early in the process is often a good idea because they can help do what we call a preliminary zoning analysis. So they can get the address of the piece of property. They can go to a city GIS and extract the data to perform that preliminary zoning analysis on the property. They can go meet with the city or county, meet with the different agencies, and prepare a report for you that will define your things such as setbacks, height limits, maximum buildable area, open space requirements, all of these kind of restrictions that your project will have to conform to. So I'll kind of go into a little bit more depth on that. Each zone that a property is in has different requirements. So for example, in California, we have R1 zones, R2 zones. R1 is typically single family, R2 is usually duplexes, and then R3 through 5 is multi-family condos or apartments. You obviously definitely want to, if you're planning on building a single family home, you want to make sure that you're within that R1 zoning district, right? So that's a very elementary qualification or requirement that you want to make sure that you're aware of. Okay, then you want to look at the different agencies having jurisdiction over the lot. We call those AHJs, agencies having jurisdiction over the lot, and develop a list with your architect and define each of the requirements or restrictions that that AHJ will impose upon your lot. So a list of the agencies having jurisdiction could be the building department, planning department, public works department, the fire department, environmental agencies. There's in California, there's an endless list of agencies that often have jurisdiction over a particular property. And it is the owner's and architect's job to compile that list, define each of the requirements for each of those agencies, and adhere to those requirements. Depending upon the project size and other characteristics, additional agencies and departments may have more regulations that you need to comply with. I won't go too much into that, but at the outset, there will be of a project, there's going to be a defined list of agencies that you have to comply with as you continue going through the project, depending upon the design, size of it. There may be layered on additional agencies that needed to be complied with. Next question is, what are the key considerations when selecting the right contractor? This is a great question. I think the analogy that I often use is on a construction project, especially on a single family home, custom residential project, an architect and a contractor are in some ways analogous to surgeons going into surgery. And as an architect, I want to make sure that the contractor working on the project, my co-surgeon, is qualified, has good experience, capable of executing the project, and can really perform well. So these considerations are very important. We'll often work with the architect to help select the contractor or to provide them counsel on maybe what we're seeing from a specific contractor. But I'll go into a couple of the key points on what owners should look for and what steps they should take when selecting the contractor. So first and foremost, experience. So walking, getting a list of past projects completed by the general contractor, walking those projects if they're open and available, looking at the level of detail, the quality, transitions of materials, looking at how well the home has weathered, how well it's maintained itself are really key. And then referrals from clients and architects. So talking to those homeowners whose houses you walk that the contractor built is really also very critical. Getting insight into their experience and the details of what that journey looked like with the contractor. Were they easy to work with? Were they difficult to work with? What were the challenges that they incurred on the project, and how were those challenges handled? with every project, there's going to be challenges. There's going to be hurdles that need to be overcome. And it's not about what those challenges are, because they will occur. It's how the team responds and solves those problems. A big factor that I think should be not underplayed is the compatibility or personality, bedside manner, and this, let's call it the synchronicity of the general contractor and the owner's just person. How easy are they to get along with? Do you have a good relationship with them? Are they easy to talk to? Are they down to earth? Are they reasonable people? That's really an important piece. There's going to be a long relationship that you will be in with this contractor. There's going to be challenges that you will have to overcome with the architect, contractor, and owner. And you want to be working with somebody who is understanding, down to earth, understands the big picture goal, is easy to work with, and has a good bedside manner too. Okay, something too when selecting a contractor is the thoroughness and competency in bidding the project. So once the plans have been submitted to the city and permitted, and you have an approved set of plans, we usually go through and assist and give the owner counsel on what's called the bidding phase of the project. So in that phase, we're interviewing different contractors to potentially work on the job. The thoroughness and competency and, let's say, eagerness to which they are presenting their bid is really telling in a project. And when the owner and architect and contractor are sitting down at a table, those things, you can read those things off of a contractor and say, okay, this person is really interested. They clearly have studied the plans. They understand the nuances of the project. They understand the quality that we're looking for. They're asking really good questions about to clarify certain things in the job. And just that depth of knowledge, understanding, and eagerness is a very kind of telling piece of the puzzle for us as the architect and then as the owner as well. Asking questions about the contract structure that the owner will engage upon or engage with the general contractor is really important. So reviewing that contract structure to ensure it's clear and works for the owner is really important. This is kind of a whole nother discussion about contracts that I could go on for hours about. It's incredibly important. I think having an attorney or counsel review that with the owner in tandem with the architect is a nice idea, just to make sure that the owner is completely clear with the services being performed by the general contractor. All the parties are under the same understanding with what the responsibilities are, how the protocols work, how information is going to be exchanged, and how different construction challenges may be handled. So this brings me to my next point: is how would you want to ask the contractor, how do you deal with typical construction challenges? How do you deal with change orders? How do you deal with project delays? How do you deal with issues when the work is maybe not up to the standard of the owner? How are those things dealt with, and how has the contractor dealt with those in the past? Having a clear understanding of those in advance of them occurring on a job site is extremely important. They will occur, at least a handful of them will occur. And so just having that kind of peace of mind to know that there's a plan of action on how to address these and how to kind of work through them as a team is critical. Okay, asking what their payment or invoicing structure or procedures are on a job. When are invoices going to be issued? Are they issued as a percentage of completion of the work? Are they issued on a monthly basis? What do those look like? So that there's no surprises during the process of the job. And then one thing that's important, yes, for the owner, but also important for the architect is, are they familiar and let's say well-versed on the typical AIA, so American Institute of Architects, construction protocol? So your architect should really discuss this with them, with the client in the same meeting, to ensure that all players are on the same page. They understand how the shop drawing process works. This, when I'm referencing shop drawings, these are pieces of paperwork and information exchanged during the construction process. So how are shop drawings exchanged? How are submittals exchanged? How are substitutions dealt with? There's an understanding, or at least a general understanding of how these things work, what types of approvals need to be in place in order to continue with work. That's very critical. When selecting a general contractor, often I'll advocate owners or be an advocate for a service called pre-construction services. So contractors offer pre-construction services. This is just what it says. So before construction has started, an owner can have the option to sign on a general contractor as more or less of a consultant to be looking at the construction specific related challenges, obstacles, of the specific project. So the architect is going to be looking at this as well, but the contractor can come into the project early in its phase, be handed a set of, let's say, preliminary documents or preliminary drawings of the concept design, and begin to identify potential construction challenges. They can also begin to identify or put together, assemble a, let's say, more precise bid than maybe the architect would be able to, because they have access to the specific subcontractors that they will be using on the project. This is really important. So you can get a more refined, dialed in bid, start to refine the budget and cost of the project earlier in the process. And then you can also look at things that the architect may not be totally focused on, such as, okay, how are we going to get, we need this large piece of steel to be craned into this property. How is that actually going to work? What are the challenges of this? How are these things going to work during construction? You can start to kind of vet out and solve some of these processes or these issues early in the project. And I think that the other thing that the client would be important for the client to ask is what does the scheduling look like? Or can the general contractor provide a schedule? They always should provide a schedule on a construction project, but early in the phase, in the bidding phase, what does a typical project schedule look like? What are those major milestones? Do they identify these kind of nuanced phases inside of the project to help the whole team be on board the depth or to be kind of informed of what's happening on site? The depth and quality and thoroughness of that schedule that is produced is very telling. And I recommend reviewing that with your architect and asking questions on what that process looks like with each contractor that you're interviewing. Okay, I'll move into the next question. How do I plan for unforeseen issues or budget overruns on my custom home? Super common question. Extremely important question. The first thing I'll say is assembling the right people is critical. And I know that seems maybe cliche and like a no-brainer, but the people on a project, they can make or break a project. So a team capable of delivering a good design, but also understanding the economics behind their decisions is critical. So an architect that understands the cost of certain decisions that they're making is key. Engineering, especially structural engineers that are when they're designing the structural frame and foundation for projects, they're not just thinking about the structural integrity of the home, they're thinking about the economics of their decisions and their design. So they're saying, hey, I could put a piece of steel here, but if we made this minor adjustment, I could downsize that piece of steel to a wood post, thus helping to save cost, time of construction, to make the structure more efficient and begin to kind of help whittle down, let's say, unnecessary pieces of budget within the project. Okay, the second thing that we can do to help kind of control the costs on jobs is to establish, like we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation, establishing a clear and accurate pro forma or budget right at the very beginning. So working with an architect early in the process to say, here's my numbers. This is what I have to spend on hard cost, soft cost, and this is what I've spent on my land is incredibly important. It sets the tone for the entire project. when there's ambiguity in that, I think it kind of trickles or ripples through the entire project. So that question may be difficult to answer at the conception of a project, but if you can't answer the budgetary questions early in the process, at least putting in a budget placeholder to say, hey, this is what we're shooting for. This is the number I want to come in underneath for my job. That will allow your architect, your general contractor, and other team members to say, okay, we know the end goal of this, right? We know if we're, I'll use the analogy, if we're the captain on the ship guiding a homeowner on a journey, we know the island or the destination that we're headed for. This is as opposed to just kind of sailing in the sea without any clarity. And I would say when we're budgeting, be relatively conservative on that budget, you know, put in padding, put in a contingency. This is because of many unknowns in the nature of the construction process, and also many unknowns in the within the future of the market or the economy. Cost of goods, certain goods can go up or down. We've seen that over the past couple of years where a door and window package may have cost, let's say, $200,000 in 2018. And that then with certain economical and political things that occur could have increased to $750,000. Those are dramatic costs, and putting in budgetary numbers that can at least help to soften the blow of those unknowns is wise. Okay, and then a thorough set of drawings with as few gaps, or we call them assumptions or allowances, as possible. So we want to produce for the owner a set of drawings that's as thorough and comprehensive as we possibly can to define, describe, and describe the building. Now, there is a point of diminishing returns. It doesn't make sense for an architect to detail out everything in a building. That is a point of diminishing returns, but we want to be as specific as we can to define things like materials, door and window systems, specific detailing, reveals, really get into the nitty gritty of the detailing of the home and specific construction components, so that when the contractor is bidding the home, he's not having to go through and put it in allowances or assumptions for certain line items or building components. We know that the set of documents, for example, we know that the set of documents calls for a Fleetwood Edge door and window package with a concealed drainage sill. That's the product that is bid. We have the hard cost associated with that, and that cost goes into the budget. It's a hard cost. It's you know, not necessarily locked in, but it's much more accurate than the owner saying than the architect not specifying a door and window system for a project. There's a wide range of door and window systems that could be used on jobs. And so when a contractor is bidding a project, they may go in and bid, if not defined in the set of drawings, a more economical or lower end door and window system. So when they present that bid to the owner, you know, it appears lower if the owner and architect aren't asking questions and studying the bid and going and doing bid leveling, the bid will appear lower to the eye, but the quality of that product will not be up to the expectation and desire of the owner and the architect. So it's important to define all of these different components of the building. So allowing the architect, and I'm biased on this point, obviously, but allowing the architect adequate time to produce a set of comprehensive and thorough drawings with as many details, as highly detailed as it can be, is definitely one of the most potent ways to control costs on a project. Add a disclaimer here: a set of plans is only as good as contractor, or the depth to which the contractor goes in and reads them. An architect can produce a very comprehensive, thorough set of drawings, but if the contractor is not reading them and budgeting, bidding, and building what's in those drawings, it's in effect, money that is not being spent wisely. So making sure that the contractor understands the drawings or reading the drawings, understands all the specs and has those specs bid out appropriately in their proposal to the owner is key. Gaps in information or allowances most often result in schedule delays and budget overruns. When changes need to occur in the field or when different products need to be assessed and ordered during construction, all that does is elongate the construction process. Whereas if you were able to define those construction systems in the original set of drawings, the general contractor could have already been in the process of engaging the sub to provide those products and submitting the orders in. Okay, hopefully you guys, this is the last question that we'll go through today. Hopefully this has been good information. I realize that this is definitely much more practical and kind of pragmatic information. I think it does reflect the vast majority of questions that we receive at the outset of projects from potential clients and people wanting to build their home because they're trying to determine if this is a feasible, realistic endeavor for them. So they're wanting to answer these big questions related to costs, related to the major team or the primary players on the team. What are the fees going to be? Scheduling. Those are the primary questions that we get. So I wanted to pack this thing through the most pertinent questions or most applicable questions to those people new to the process and just beginning on their adventure to build their custom home. Last question that we'll go through is what's the typical design process for a custom home? So keep in mind that there's several different phases in the, it's called the design, documenting, and permitting of a project. So I'm only talking about the design process. This is the step in the process, often the one that's the most fun for both the owner and the architectural team, the design team. But this is a question that is asked quite a bit. So it's very high level. There are nuances of every single different project, but this is a high level overview. So first talk about land analysis and purchase. We kind of touched on this at the beginning, but usually we're helping the owner to conduct some sort of preliminary study, preliminary zoning analysis on a piece of property. Key things early in the process are finding a geotechnical or soils report on a piece of land. Now, I didn't mention this at the beginning, but before purchasing a piece of land, if you can find some sort of geotechnical or soils report on the property that you're looking to purchase, that can be really revealing. So what a geotechnical or soils report does is it talks about the strata of soil underneath the lot. So you know what the layers are. Is this a clay site? Is it sandy underlain with bedrock? Is it, whatever that makeup may be, this is very important to determine early on in the process because it has massive implications on what the design of the foundation of the home is going to be. So for example, if there's unstable soil in the top part of the, boring from the soils report, that means that the foundation is going to have to go all the way down through those into stable soil or bedrock. Now, obviously, the more extensive, farther down you have to go to get to stable soil, that means directly costs increase. So cost of foundation, it can vary widely based upon the lot. So getting that preliminary soils report or seeing if there were adjacent properties with comparable soils reports completed can also help determine the composition of your property. Looking at utility availability. So if owners are looking at a piece of land, kind of a rural piece of land, where many are when they come to us, they're looking at a very rural piece of land outside of cities. Seeing what types of utilities are available and run to that site is an important thing to determine early in the process. If there's not electricity running to the site, if there's not sewer going to the site, if there's not water there, all of those pieces of infrastructure are going to have to be installed and taken from the main in the street and plumbed, dug, and directed to where the home will be. This is a cost that many owners overlook, and it's easy to overlook, frankly. So knowing that there will be an additional cost incurred just to get these utilities and services from the main to the location where the home is going to be is critical to determine. Yeah, so this is all kind of part of this preliminary studies phase of the design process. I know I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but I do think these points are important to cover. Looking at the environmental restrictions, and also I want to talk a little bit about slope. So one of the early things that we're going to look at in the design process is, what's the slope of this lot? If it's a steeply sloping lot, like many of the hillside homes that we work on in Orange County, LA area, that immediately to me, not always, but often will suggest a higher investment of costs or higher investment needs to be made into the foundation of the home. That's also another conversation for a different live stream, but just think the steeper the slope, typically the higher the cost of construction. Okay, once we've done this kind of preliminary analysis, we're going to go through our preliminary budgeting and help the owner dial in that pro forma that we talked about earlier in the process. We're going to assemble a document with a rough description of the house, defining their desired square footage, bed bath count, major rooms, special features, and a few conceptual images of the home that they like, to kind of get a picture, a high level picture of what their vision for the home is. We're going to cross check these square footage desires, bed bath count, major rooms, and special features with what their budget is, to make sure that they're talking to each other, that they're in alignment. If we have a budget that's very modest and the homeowner is wanting 12 rooms in the house, you know, there has to be a reconciliation of those two, let's say, variables on the job. Okay, then going through the process of engaging the architect if you hadn't already. So there's many different ways to structure the contract with your architect. Again, a topic for another conversation, but that is a step in the process to get them engaged early in the process to help you, help guide and steer you in the right direction so you get the project off in the right foot, allowing them to do their due diligence on the lot. And then also begin to conduct, we call it preliminary zoning meetings. This is in tandem with that preliminary zoning analysis that I talked about. Our team, myself, will go down to the city, and this is pretty typical for other firms, I'm sure, as well, to talk with the different agencies in person to confirm that these requirements that we're seeing on the GIS and their different systems is in harmony with the information that we're getting from the planners, building department officials, and different heads of these different agencies. We want to kind of cross-check those two. Now, it's a fun part, beginning the schematic design. So I know it's a big lead up to this point, but there is a significant amount of kind of due diligence, back work, and preparation that needs to be done before we even start to put pen to paper. I completely believe in being totally informed and in full, to our best capacity, understanding of the lot, the project requirements, variables, certain challenges we're dealing with. We need to have a real good picture in our mind of a map. If I use the analogy again of this journey that we're going on, sailing through the sea, we need to have a good idea of the map that and the kind of terrain or seas that we're going to traverse together before we even get on the ship to set sail. So beginning the schematic design process, the architect really should do kind of a thorough site observation. So going out to the site, spending many hours there, observing the wildlife, looking at the views, looking at how the sun crosses the site, just getting a personal human understanding of the environment of that site. That's critical. Then going into producing the site plan and floor plan for the project, producing the options. Once that floor plan is produced and once it's presented to the owner, there's revisions that are made. The spaces, the size of the spaces, the adjacencies of rooms are feeling good to the owner. We get their approval to proceed into the modeling phase of the project. So we'll take that plan, we'll begin to actually create the shell of the home, and we can flash some images up in the final video of what the images that we typically produce in our office start to look like. So it's important that the owner is seeing the home from many different angles. They're really understanding what the house will look like. The images should show conceptual materials, just an idea of like kind of the textures and the feeling that we want to convey in the home. Are we using real dark woods? Is this more light palette? What are the different textures of the stones we're using? What are the exterior spaces and shell of the home? What does that massing look like? Okay, once we go through several, and again, this is very high level. There's much more to this that we go into, but I want to kind of keep it broad for now. Once that's approved, once those concept floor plans, site plans, concept perspective renderings, and concept material package is approved by the owner, we're going to deliver that schematic package to the owner and begin to schedule our preliminary scoping meetings with the city to review the design with the applicable agencies. So I mentioned at the beginning, if you recall, during preliminary scopings before design started. Now, after the schematic design process is towards the end of that, we're going to conduct another series of scoping meetings with the city to do another check, another checkpoint with them, kind of a pulse checkup with the city to show them these renders, say, hey, here's the preliminary design. We want to make sure that our interpretation of the code is correct, that you're on board with the direction that we're heading. Nothing in this design is way out of conformance. And we begin to kind of tighten up the design in that way with them. If we've done our due diligence with them early in the process, this is usually a relatively straightforward meeting. We're acquainting the planners, the plan checkers, and the building officials with the design that we're going to propose and making them familiar with it, so we're not startling them with some new thing that they haven't seen when we submit the project. We're also establishing rapport and relationships with the specific planners on the project to make sure that they understand that we're wanting to communicate with them, we're wanting to be in dialogue with them, we're wanting to conform with the requirements and go through the process appropriately and professionally. Again, high level, that's a high level overview. That would conclude the design process. From there, we would move on to what we call design development and construction documents. That's for another live stream. I can talk about that in a future time, but those are the two next steps in the process of a project. So I hope that I've been able to give you guys some good information. I feel like that really kind of hits on a lot of key points that of questions that owners typically come into the office and ask us. And these are really important. They've been kind of curated from a list of questions that were submitted to us. So if you have additional questions about any of the things that we talked about today or want some clarification, please put a comment below and we can hopefully get those addressed. If you want to hear about other topics unrelated to the questions that we talked about today for a separate subsequent live stream, please also put those in the comments and then we will go through them, we'll vet them and compile them and try to hopefully address them at a future live stream. Thanks so much. And again, hopefully that was valuable to you to give you a broad stroke overview of the start of a design process and the preliminary stages of building your custom home. Thanks so much.